I really willfully wanted to sin. My elbow tingled with the joyous thought of crushing his mouth. And my guys knew it, so they got me out of the way while they handled it. And then the restaurant handled it. Hated without a cause. But it was like, God, let me just see. The passionate hatred the world has for the light. You're not of the world because I've chosen you out of the world, therefore the world hateth you. You turn back to the world, oh, will they love you? Did you renounce the world? Did you renounce the flesh? Are you renouncing the world? Are you renouncing the flesh? Did you renounce the devil? Are you renouncing the devil? If not, your bed is too short to stretch on. You cannot find rest on a broken vow, can you? Instead of renouncing the flesh, you've pampered and ministered to its constant clamant cry. Instead of renouncing the devil, you've allowed the devil to lead you and drive you at his will. And yet you think you are still a Christian? No, 1,000 times no, for the bed is shorter than that a man can stretch himself on it. In the honest integrity of conviction, you know that on such a bed there is no rest. On such a false assumption, there is no place of refuge. Someone will say, someone else, 10 years ago, 15, 20, I gave myself to Christ and I'm all right. By no means necessarily so. The fact that Jesus saved me yesterday is in itself no use now. Unless I'm able to link on to my past tense, a present tense, then woe is me, for I am undone. The great apostle, writing his own biography in rapid sentences at the Philippian epistle, said, I count all things but loss. That's what happened on the way to Damascus, and that's the way he ended his trip too. Suppose that having counted all things but dross, think back at the times you laid it all on the altar. Well, I've been doing that recently. I remember when I said to this congregation, I would never prove something to you again. Oh boy, am I ready to prove it to God right now. Suppose that having counted all things but dross, Paul had gone back and picked him up again. And said they were precious. Never should have laid them down. It was a mistake. Suppose sin had triumphed because he had gone back to the world and forsaken the things of Christ, as Demas did, of whom he said, Demas hath forsaken me, having loved this present world more than the world to come. Suppose Paul had done that. Suppose I do it. Suppose you do it. But right now we're supposing Paul. Suppose he had turned his back on the Christ and crucified him afresh. God help us. And had counted the blood of the covenant an unholy thing, an unnecessary, and done despite unto the Spirit of grace. What then? Then I tell you, this is his point, that past experience, that cleansing on the road to Damascus, and all that went before would have been of no avail. But in that great chapter he said something else, yea, verily, and I count all things but lost. Present tense, the past is the present also. He never changed. Jesus saved me on the Damascus road, Jesus saves me now. I'm afraid the Church of Jesus Christ full of men and women who are living on past experience, and they sing at rare or regular intervals, as their choice may be, where is the blessedness I had when first I found the Lord? Men and women sing that as though it were a sign of saintship. It's a sign they've lost their saintship. The blessedness I had when I first found the Lord is with me yet. but it is greater, mightier, and flows as a river instead of a rivulet. That should be the language of the true saint. The bed is shorter than a man can stretch himself on. There is no rest in a past profession that is not merged into a perpetual, continuous possession. Once again, here's the man who tells me he's trusting God, that he's casting himself on God, that God's too good to punish him. Oh, man, God is too good to let you go unpunished. There are men who, if they passed into heaven as they are, and women, if they passed into heaven as they are, they'd turn it into hell. God writes on the portal of his home clear biblical words, "There shall in no wise enter into it anything unclean, or he that maketh an abomination and a lie." God is so good that he will not let anything that works abomination into his dwelling place and home. If we will not accept the conditions of his heaven, in love to heaven, in love to truth, in love to the well-being of his other saints, he must shut us out. He must visit us on the vials, or visit on us the vials of his wrath, the punishment we have positively and deliberately chosen. If you can persuade me that God will allow a man to sin until character becomes sin, and then let him, the impure, into the land of light, then you will persuade me that God is unkind with an unkindness that's plain awful. His wrath flames in the passion of his love. The punishment that he visits on the sinner is the necessary outcome of the infinite compassion of his heart. Be not deceived, God's not mocked. Don't sneer at him. He's not going to let us rewrite character as sin, and then let sin be called good. Let me turn to the last illustration I used. The man tells me there is time enough yet, that he has no time yet, that he's postponing these things to a more convenient season, that business presses and pleasures allure, and that someday, and in a little while, he'll attend to his religion. Just give me some R&R, God. Oh, how often the messengers of the cross have had to speak of the famous folly of this position. Long before the Christian light had fallen on men, the philosopher said to his students, "Gentlemen, the supreme thing is that we be ready to die." One of their number said, "That is true, and I propose to be ready." Asked the teacher, "When do you propose to prepare?" "Just before I die," came the flippant answer. Then the old man said, "And now, sir, have you fixed the date of your dying? You know when it will be? Seeing that you may die within a moment, this is the time to prepare for dying. I grant you that the soul cast on God in the last extremity is mercifully saved for Jesus' sake. But when is the hour of your last extremity? Moreover, how do you know that when the passing comes?" You ever had loved ones in this state? How do you know that when the passing comes, all the intellect will not have lost its power to think? "Oh, but God will forgive, because if I had known I'd end in this state, I would have made my decisions earlier. I would have corrected some of the impurity, some of the things in my lifestyle that are based on defiance of God's truth and God's way." Well, how do you know that when your time comes, the intellect will not have lost its power to think? God's time is perpetual now. Now is the accepted time. Now is the day of salvation. I go from Morgan to Hebrews. Today, if you hear his voice, harden not your heart. I say something Morgan didn't say. What the children of Israel did at Kadesh Barnea was not as bad as what they did at Rephidim. What they did at Kadesh Barnea was not as bad as what they did in front of the Red Sea, and was nearly as bad as what they did during the delivering process at Egypt. Egypt was the straw that broke the camel's back. Every time you hear the word, it's going to bring death or life. You're going to say yes or no. Some of you have already said the final no. You wish I'd shut up. Because nothing means anything to you. You don't care anymore. Because God's Spirit's left you. You said your final no. But those that still have that tugging and that questioning and that urging, that is a sign the Holy Spirit that will not always strive with man, without whom no man can come to God, is still there nudging. One more no could be your last one. I don't peddle fear. I live in this fear. With the light comes responsibility. You could wish you didn't have the light. You got it. God's time is now. There is not a man really at rest who is postponing the decision of infinite and eternal and important things. You can't be at rest there. The bed is shorter than that a man can stretch himself on it. Let us remember that the thing on which we're trying to rest we shall need as a refuge in the day that is coming. When we are hurled into the darkling void, how will our excuse as to time avail us when time is no more? But thank God for the message of the prophets, who ere he satirized the men who thought they had made an agreement with death, a covenant with death, an agreement with hell. He uttered these words, "Behold, I lay in Zion a foundation, a stone, a tried stone, a precious cornerstone of sure foundation, Christ, who still knocks at the door of the heart. He who rests there shall have no restlessness. He who takes refuge there shall know nothing of the fitful fever of the man who attempts to wrap himself in a narrow covering. The resting place is long enough and broad enough and strong enough to rest the weary soul and give it perfect peace. Bold shall I stand in that great day if I am arrayed in the robe that he brings me, his covering of his righteousness, of which Paul writes, which has been set forth as at the disposal of men by faith and unto faith." Turn from your false rest right now. Return to the true, and you will find in God all that your soul is needing now, before it's too late, and all that it will need in that last unutterable day where his refuge is the only safety. He was a great preacher. I hope he helped you. Get on telephone.